Thank you, Mike, for your story earlier. Reminded me of the story of the man who arrived in heaven, and he was asked about the one brave thing that he'd done. He said, "Well, I'm a Chelsea supporter, and I stood among Spurs supporters when they were playing against Chelsea, and I cheered Chelsea's goals." "Oh, when was that?" he was asked. 2 minutes ago," was the reply. Have we got the first one up? Thank you. Recently, I put a message on a friend's message thread. She's been a dear friend for many, many years since our Western Supermare days. And she has suffered with mental health issues for many years. She became a follower of Jesus, and she has constantly asked for prayer for what she's been going through over these years. She had a particularly bad couple of weeks not so long ago. And I thought I was being helpful when I quoted Mother Julian of Norwich to her with the words, "All will be well and all manner of things shall be well." Her response was, well, this is the polite version. "It sounds good, Malcolm, but when you find this God of wellness, just let me know and tell me how I can discover wellness for myself." For her, there are times when her experience of God and prayer is a bit like searching for Wally in those books, only worse. At least as you turn these pages, you know he's there somewhere. Otherwise, you get your money back. I mean, it's a bit of a trick. She isn't looking for Wally, of course, but a sense, more often than she experiences it, of God's presence and wellness, a sense of love being with her. And I was reminded of this when preparing this for this morning, because I think Esther, and this is why I say you've got to read the book, really. Make a great sermon series for this day and age, I think, is a helpful book in this regard. Not least because it's one of the two books in the Bible that doesn't actually mention God. Indeed, God's silence in this book is so pervasive that it's not even mentioned. It's what I would call a biblical "Where's Wally?" As one commentator puts it, Esther speaks into our own context, where the reality of God's presence is often experienced against a backdrop of God's relative anonymity and seeming absence. Next one, thank you. "For the people of Israel, the glory days of the kingdom are long over." You thinking back to that series we did on the big story. "God's people are now insignificant and scattered, and it seems like God is nowhere to be seen." And Esther reflects that sort of place. Yes, on the surface, it's thought to be a book which was written to explain, as it were, the origins of a Jewish festival. But then I think we discover one of its purposes, its other purpose, is to get people of faith to actually work at finding God, especially at those difficult times of loss, trauma, distress, suffering, persecution, chaos, what's going on in the world around us, when we feel far from home and in exile. Some Christians, if God doesn't show up just like that, I don't know. Even the most faithful and ardent among us experience those times, don't we, of exile, when our lives are defined more by "Where's Wally?" than, say, the crash, bang, wallop of Red Sea crossings and those Jericho walls coming tumbling down. And reading through Esther is like opening the Wally book and discovering he's not there in any of the pictures, except We might find a bobble hat left on the beach. Or his scarf may be floating around in the beak of a seagull. His shadow in the corner, or we find a friend saying, "You remind me of that funny guy with the hat and the scarf who used to hang around a bit. You know, what's his name?" As far as Esther is concerned, we are left searching for God at work amongst the messiness, the moral compromise, the complexity, and also the downright evil. Where is God when his people are being annihilated? Where is God when his people themselves commit similar atrocities? That's there as well. It's not quite as one-sided as that put it, I think. So you can see why Esther is a great book to explore at this time. It scratches where a heck of a lot of people are itching, to put it bluntly. Not least people of faith. Where is God in this narrative? We know he's there, but where? Where can my friend and your friends, and maybe yourselves even, find God? In the shadows. Next one, thank you. So as we look at Esther, and don't worry, I'm not going to take you through it now. Where is God to be found? Yes, there are references to Mordecai's and his ward Esther's Jewish background. We find that. The closest God comes to the surface is probably in the famous words that have sort of shaped this service, really. "And who knows," says Mordecai, "for such a time as this." It's that phrase, "and who knows," which actually has a lot more to it than just a shrug of the shoulders. It's a sort of, at least, who knows, you know, maybe Esther. There's a higher purpose at work here. The words don't take us really any further than that, however much we would like them to. At least we see through the book glimpses of God at work, a bobble hat here, a shadow there. And the bottom line, and I might be going out on a limb here, folks, so bear with me. I'm being brave here a bit, I think, maybe. But for me at least, the fact that God is not always easy to find in the chaos and complexity is not just about being realistic and giving us encouragement to seek him amongst the rubble, but is also a call to followers of Jesus to get stuck in. It calls us to courageously engage and be at the forefront of working for shalom justice, all the while trusting in the God who is always at work, even if we struggle sometimes to know and experience that. Just get on with it. Walking humbly with our God. Esther isn't the perfect heroine by any stretch. Again, you need to read the book. It's positively morally ambiguous, but she recognizes a call from on high, as it were, to engage. I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes I've had in my life those moments where I think to myself, this cannot be. And you've got to do something. God is always and forever still God, but maybe this story is a reminder that God doesn't control the world with seemingly robotic movement, but rather expresses his love, peace, and justice in and through those who say, "Yes, this cannot be." And with Esther, step up. Perhaps those places where it seems that God is not are the places where we are called to be. Esther shows us a God who is always there and gives us the opportunity to step forward and to be part of God's kingdom come on earth as in heaven. I'm reminded of Revelation from the other week, the new heaven and a new earth. God wants to be with people. That's what Jesus is all about. There is plenty of darkness around at the moment. And God needs a few more Esthers who have faith, love, courage, and the sheer audacity to light a candle of hope and future in those places of darkness and pain. It's daunting, but like Esther, we know God is with us. Even the darkness is not darkness to him. Even the silence screams out with his presence. So where does my dear friend in Weston discover the presence and love of God? Not from people like me, certainly posting nuanced theology, but from those dear, dear friends of Jesus around her who pray. Hold her hand and be the Christ light to her for such a time as this. So with Esther, where is God calling you and I to be the presence and voice of blessing, love, and grace? To be the mouths, hands, and feet of God's justice and peace, builders of his new heaven and new earth. It may be a tough call, and will we say yes for such a time as this?
Thank you, Malcolm, for such a time as this.